Your business, your life. Weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on San Diego's ESPN 1700.
This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you and welcome. RayLucia.com is where you can go right now if you want to email me, RAYLUCIA.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. If you email me during this show, I will jump on it. I'll get right to your emails because I know it's important to you. Otherwise, I will get to them personally. I answer them all. RayLucia.com, RAYLUCIA.com. Calls, of course, 844-RAY-SHOW. A terrific show planned for you this hour. You want to stick around for all of it because I'm going to be doing a little lesson plan on a few things. For example, I got to find it first. Real estate, the original alternative investment. We know we talk about alts all the time. Liquid alts, non-liquid alts, hedge funds and all that stuff. Non-correlating asset classes. Real estate, the best alt of all. Creditor protection in retirement accounts. This is important. Are your retirement accounts protected from creditors? You never know when you get sued, especially if you own a business or whatever. It's hard nowadays to go through a lifetime if you're in business and not be sued. And knowing what I know about lawyers, it doesn't matter whether you're guilty or innocent. It's whoever's got the best lawyer wins. And that's a fact. But the best lawyers are the ones that charge the most. And one would argue that they're probably worth it. We might get a chance to talk about Fidelity's perspective on interest rates or mine. But I start today with this. Are you feeling a little anxious about the market? Sit back, folks. Relax.
Stand up and shine.
Yeah. Because, you know, we've been there before, and it's impossible for me to really, I think, allay whatever anxiousness that you have. But I'm going to try the best I can with a little help from John Mayer, not the entertainer, the CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. Obviously, we have seen 8 years of a rise in equities, 250-300% gain on our portfolios. And that makes a lot of the financial pundits very anxious. And so they talk about it on 24-hour news channels and so forth. We didn't have to use that. We didn't have those in the olden days. We didn't have cable. I had rabbit ears, man. Don't you remember rabbit ears? Now we have cable, and I get, you know, they get the crawler on the bottom. I can look at my stocks. I got the internet. I can talk to Siri and say, you know, what's Qualcomm trading at today? I can do all that stuff, and it gives me the false sense of security that I actually know what I'm doing. Yes, even myself, who have spent 40 years studying this stuff, cannot predict whether or not the market is frothy right now, as many say. Here's what John Mayer, CFA, had to say. Reinforcing this sense of unease, market pundits, talking heads, and other so-called financial experts touting their theories on financial news networks of why the other shoe is finally about to drop, including the increased tensions with North Korea. I mean, the list can go on and on. Let's see. The list du jour, Obamacare from a month or two ago. It's Obamacare. What a disaster. The Republicans are inept. They can't get anything through. Tax policy's not going to make. I mean, any number of reasons why we should be anxious about the market. The doomsday scenarios, though, you must remember. And having also a background in radio and television, I can tell you this. What is it? If it bleeds, it leads? Yeah. Yeah, doomsday scenarios get ratings. Whenever you're negative like that, it gets ratings. I mean, and I've been criticized. Oh, really? Well, you're just boring because you talk about the same stuff all the time. Buy and hold, buy and hold. That's just buy and hope. You know what? I don't care what you call it, but virtually every study that's ever been done, barring some one-offs, have pretty much said boring is better when it comes to investing. Boring is better. Get your strategy right. Make sure you've got your tax plan right. Set it and forget it. Not totally. Tweak it from time to time. But don't be too active with moving the money around because you think you have a hunch, your broker has a hunch, or the CAPE is this, or the trailing PE is that, or we've gone up 8 years and the ninth year has got to be the down. Don't do that. Because number one, it will probably affect your wealth. And number two, it will drive you crazy. So here is what Mr. Mayer had to say. An index is just a number. Earlier this year, he goes on, the Dow crept toward 20,000. The financial news networks breathlessly reported. They have those little crawlers on the side of the screen or whatever they're called. Countdown to Dow 20,000. As if that's some milestone that after you hit it, something's going to happen. Well, you know what happened? We went to the next milestone and then to the next milestone. Next, bull markets do not die of old age. A lot of people think that, and you know, we've said it, this bull market is long in tooth. This bull market is older than dirt. We can make up all kinds of sayings about the bull market. But when you hear that the Dow or an index has eclipsed an ostensibly important milestone, the primary emotion is not elation, as it should be, it's fear. In your mind, in the customer's mind, in the advisor's mind, it's a sign that stocks are too frothy and something must be done. But as I said, the index is just a number. Just keep one thing in mind. We have come back from the dregs of a peak to trough minus 57% decline. Interest rates are low. They're at historic lows. So market corrections, he goes on, are standard operating procedure. They're normal occurrences. Check this out. From the beginning of 1980 to March of this past year, the average intra-year drop in the S&P was 14.1%. Think about that for a minute. If you had a 14.1% drop tomorrow, the news networks would be going ballistic. They'd be pushing sell, sell, sell buttons. Yet, despite on average since 1980, intra-year, we've seen 14.1% drops. They just don't all come in one day. But they do come every cotton-picking year. 75% of the time, the market still has gone up. Which means 25% of the time, the pundits were right. 75% of the time, boring was right. And then once the pundits, the 25% of the time, were right, you have to assume they're going to be right 25% of the time getting back in. So what's 25% of 25%? I don't know, but it's not very much. And then finally, context is important. Much has been made of the fact that economic growth, both in the U.S. and across the globe, remains relatively sluggish. As a result, many pundits have touted the idea that markets can't possibly sustain their current levels, let alone rise. But we're in a new normal globally, folks. It's been this way for a while. As I said, interest rates are not only historically low, they're phenomenally low by comparative numbers. So you must put all of this in its proper context. Inflation is low, interest rates are low, corporate profits are high and getting better. And so the market may be able to sustain for the next several years without crashing. But even if they do, buy and hold works. I'll explain more about that when we come back. Don't go away.
Listen anywhere, anytime to San Diego's ESPN 1700. We're streaming live at ESPN1700.com.
Or download the free ESPN 1700 app from Google Play or iTunes.
Well, before the break, I said boring may be better. Even this time around, after we've gone 8-9 years now in a bull market, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Great Depression. What a great bull run. Well, maybe, you know, during the 90s we had a wicked bull market after the 87 crash and so forth. So maybe since 87, but it's still been a heck of a long time since we've seen this kind of a bull run. Therefore, a lot of pundits are saying, well, the market's frothy, the CAP is trading at 30, and they come up with all these excuses why the market is probably going to deliver single-digit returns over the next decade or so. So here's what I did. I pulled out something I talked about almost exactly a year ago. And it was a piece written by David Gillick. Here's the case for staying in the stock market for the next 10 years. Now, see, I get nervous, too, because I've got a human brain. And my emotions get the better of me, too, as an investor. We're wired that way, to have this fear factor. That's what causes us to run away from bears, which I'm told is not such a smart strategy. In either event, here's what he said a year ago. After the six-year-plus bull market in stocks has pushed prices up nearly 250%, many prognosticators are now calling for low single-digit returns. Some even expect a bear market. While this assumption may seem reasonable, given uncertainty and volatility in markets, history suggests an annualized return in the mid-teens over the next 10 years, 15%. He says the markets could go up by around 15% per year for the next 10 years. And he's doing that from both an historical and academic perspective. This isn't hyperbolic. This is going back and looking at the facts, which I will recite right now. Remember, this is a year ago. To arrive at this observation, historical average returns over 20 and 30 year periods for the Standard & Poor's 500, with obviously dividends reinvested, going back to 1928 were reviewed. Using those return periods with averages that vary less than those of shorter time frames, the average annualized return for 20 years is calculated to be 11.22%, and for 30 years, 11.24%. Now, again, those are average. That takes into account the time when it only did 4%. I get that. But we got to start somewhere. So we're using average returns. He goes on. Finally, annualized average returns over the next 10 years that would equal the market's long-term average results for a 20-year period, which is basically beginning July of 2005, and a 30-year period beginning July of 1995, ending in June of 2025. To hit the average results for the 20-year period, the market would need to produce an annualized return of 14.67% per year starting this time last year. It's already done the first year, just like that. But I digress. That's over the next decade. Over the next 20 years, or for the 30-year period, going back to July of 1995, the figure was 16.09%. You would think that it would go lower, but it doesn't. It goes higher. If the bull market keeps running for another 10 years, it would be unprecedented for sure, exceeding the longest bull market on record by almost 4 years. If the market climb is interrupted by a bear market, could the 20 and 30-year averages still be reached over the next 10 years? Well, they went in and did an analysis on that. And here's what he has to say about that one. And he has a graphic, but I'll explain it. Over the next 10 years, stock investors may see the current bull market end, experience a bear market, typically defined as a 20% loss or more, and still achieve 10-year annualized returns over 14.67%. And he goes on, that suggests investors may want to consider keeping some money in U.S. stocks despite the uncertainties to help them stay invested even during a down market period. Managing for volatility will be important. Okay, so now where do we go to manage for volatility? There's two things you must do. Two things you must do. One is you must have an asset class that will get you stock market-like returns without the same degree of correlation or volatility of the stock market. And the best alternative strategy that I can think of, and there are plenty, you can talk to your advisor about others, but the one I like the most, real estate. Yes, there's private equity, there's private debt, there's hedge funds, there's all kinds of other strategies, all of which are worthy of consideration. But the one that you can identify with most is real estate. Because as I mentioned to our TV viewing audience, real estate gets you to the same place, only it gets you there with less volatility most of the time. Because the bulk of your return comes from your income. In the stock market, the bulk of your return comes from growth. So if you have growth and income in stocks, you have income and growth, the exact opposite, from real estate. That in and of itself produces returns that are similar, but they get there differently. Perfect. So real estate, I think, the perfect non-correlating asset. But there's one other thing that you must do, and that is you must identify when you might need money and how much that need might be and for how long. And work backwards, because if, in fact, you're planning on this 10-year horizon, and you're going to need income from your portfolio in 10 years, you best have 10 to 15 years worth of liquidity available to you in the event that all hell does break loose. If you do those two things with a buy and hold strategy, even if the market doesn't do 14% over the next 10 years or 16% over the next 20 years, you will likely still be handsomely rewarded, because those are average returns. I'd even settle for below average if it's double digits, and you should too. That's from a year ago. I'll probably pull this out a year from now too. Don't go away. This is The Ray Lucia Show.
Your business, your life. Weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on San Diego's ESPN 1700.
So I promised you a lesson plan. We haven't talked about this really in a couple of years now, and I think it is important, and that is how your retirement plan may help you in a lot of different ways, in particular if you're self-employed in a risky profession, have teenage drivers, a lot of different ways you could get sued for a lot more than what your personal assets are worth. And you want to make sure that you have the knowledge of how retirement plans work for creditor protection. Now, some of this is governed by state law. I'll get into that. But Paul DeLauro wrote about this, and it got me thinking about it, because as I mentioned, we haven't really discussed this, and it's something that you should know, because most of us will be sued over the course of our lifetime for something. A lot of it's minor stuff. If you're in business, almost inevitably you will be sued by an employee or by somebody or something, and it's somewhat frightening. I remember taking my employees on a trip to the river once. And I talked to my attorney, and in fact, he came with me. And he said to me, have you had them all sign releases? This is a company event. Nah, we're just going to have some fun. He said, are you bringing wave runners? Yeah, they love wave running. He made me, before anybody got on a wave runner, have them sign a release. And sure enough, one of them got in an accident, put a big hole in my wave runner, almost killed their kid. Thank God everything was fine. But literally the kid fell off the back of the wave runner about the same time a boat went right over him. My heart was in my throat. Surely, if something would have happened to that child, I would have been sued. Everybody would have been sued. Anyway, here's what DeLauro wrote, and I agree with everything Paul wrote here. Apart from your primary residence, your retirement accounts are likely the largest asset that you own. Your primary residence, by the way, may be secure from the claims of creditors up to your homestead amount and depending on what state you're in. Talk to your attorney about that. Now, you may have a pension plan. You may have a qualified retirement plan like a 401k. You may have an IRA. Those are sort of self-explanatory. Qualified retirement plan, 401k, 403b, 401a, all of those government plans are either pensions or deferrals, and both would qualify under qualified retirement and or pension plans. IRAs are a little bit different. We all know what IRAs are: Roths, SEPs, simplified employee pensions, simple plans. Even though they're employer sponsored like SEPs, they're still IRAs and they fall under the IRA rules. Okay, so here's what happened. Back in 2005, there was a Supreme Court case called the Patterson versus Shoemate case, which looked into interests in a qualified retirement plan, those governed by ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. If it is an ERISA plan, it is exempt from the claims of creditors, 100% of the money. So if you are a self-employed individual, and you have more than just you as an employee, and you put in a qualified retirement plan, like a defined benefit, cash balance plan, for you and your covered employees, that plan falls under the ERISA statutes. And if you get sued for a gajillion dollars, 100% of that money that's in the plan is exempt from the claims of creditors. How does O.J. Simpson still have $3-4 million in his ERISA retirement account from the NFL? That's how. Now, when he takes the money out, if they know when and where he's taking it out, they may be able to attach it. But that's very, very hard to do because my understanding, and don't quote me on this, I'm not a tax lawyer, is when they put an attachment on an account, it's got a finite life. So they would have to know when and from which account he's taking it from, I suspect. Anyway, he's getting out soon, so maybe we can have him on the show and he can tell us. Individual only plans. Now, these are IRAs, as I said, SEPs, simples, et cetera, et cetera. The law pertaining to IRAs as far as credit protection is not quite as well defined as qualified retirement plans. Here is what we know about IRAs. Under the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, employer-employee retirement accounts and IRAs are exempt from bankruptcy except for federal tax liens. You owe the IRS money, they can come after your retirement accounts. The act limits the exemption for traditional and Roth IRAs to $1 million adjusted upward every 3 years. Last time I checked, it was $1,245,000 and change. So, if you have an IRA, you can shelter $1.25 million of it from the claims of creditors. That's so important. It is so, so important. Now, if it's a rollover IRA, there's no exemption limit if it's a rollover from a qualified retirement plan. Once again, very, very important that you would keep your rollover separate from your traditional IRA to cut any confusion on that one. If you've got $1 million in a retirement account and $1 million in your IRA account, I would suggest the safe bet is to keep them separate, not roll them together. Whether your pension plan or IRA benefits are protected from creditor claims in non-bankruptcy situations depends on the type of the plan and whether the plan is covered by ERISA. This is an important nuance to understand. ERISA is a federal law, and federal law supersedes state law. So what does all this mean? It means if you have an ERISA plan, federal law prevails. Do you remember a few months ago when we talked about if you get divorced and you name your kids as the beneficiary of your qualified retirement plan, and then you get remarried, that it doesn't matter that you named your kids as the beneficiary, even if the state law says otherwise, because federal law says that your new spouse, not your children from the prior marriage, get that money if you die. Unless postnuptially he or she waives their right to that money, because federal law prevails with qualified retirement plans. With IRAs, as it relates to bankruptcy protection, state law prevails. So that's the important thing that you need to know about retirement accounts. Under bankruptcy, if you have a pension plan, you have full protection. If it's an owner-only qualified retirement plan, sole proprietor, partnership, owners of corporations, under a bankruptcy, you have full protection. Other qualified retirement plans, full protection. Traditional and Roth IRAs, limited to $1 million plus the inflation bump, which as of the last time I checked, as I said, is about $1.25 million protected. Anything over that is not protected. All other IRAs have full protection, like rollover IRAs and so forth. Under non-bankruptcy, if it's an ERISA plan, full protection except for Quadros, qualified domestic relations orders. That's where the court says you got to give your now ex-spouse 50% of your plan. But then it's a case-by-case basis on everything else, because the governing law will be the state that you're in. I think the state of California does give full protection. There you have it. Creditor protection in retirement accounts. Be smart about it, because it could cost you a lot, especially if you're self-employed and in a high-risk profession. Emails are coming up next. This is the one talk show you must tune into every day, because we help you make better money moves. Ray Lucia back in a flash.
Your business, your life. ESPN 1700.
You know, the cowbell as a percussion instrument, one of the greatest of all time. Remember that, Curtis? The time is on my side. It was at the Chambers Brothers with the cowbell. And then what's the Stone song that starts with the cowbell? And Mississippi Queen got the cowbell. See that? One of the great percussion instruments. I think tomorrow's show will be all about percussion. We need more cowbells. We got a cow on the air here. Welcome back, folks. It's the Ray Program. Try and have a little bit of fun with my pal Curtis and Chris. By the way, round of applause for those guys. Man, they do just a fantastic... Yes, exactly. Thank you, guys. It is time for emails, so hit it, Curtis. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman, because Craig, who also loves the show, Craig asks this. I hear rumors that the state tax deduction may go away as a federal tax deduction. Do you think this will alter investment planning? So I had to think a little bit about this. If you're buying real estate, and by the way, I apologize for not being able to get to the real estate discussion. I ran out of time. But I always do. Don't worry about it, because you tune in every day. I'll get to that mañana or the next day. But if you're buying property as an investment, I don't think you will lose the state income tax deduction. That's still an ordinary and necessary cost of doing business. So if, Craig, you're just thinking about this from an investment standpoint, I don't think you have to worry a bit. Now, if you're talking about your principal residence, this could be an issue for the 10, 11 states or whatever states charge a state tax. How many states don't? I don't know how many don't. But I know in California and Oregon and New York and places, New Jersey, it's pretty wicked. And that state income tax deduction on my federal return helps a lot. I mean, I was paying at one point, I don't want to tell you how much I was paying in state tax. But you could say the same thing about property taxes, too. State income taxes, property taxes, they're all deductible on the federal return. Now, we've only gotten hints about what the Trump administration has up its sleeve. So I don't want to... prognosticate on that. But I don't think it's going to alter your investment strategy. But here's what I might assume is going to happen. We're going to lose some deductions. I don't think we'll lose the mortgage. Here I am prognosticating. I just said I wasn't going to do this. probably won't lose the mortgage, probably won't lose the charitable. We might lose all the rest of them, for all I know. But you're probably not going to have the AMT anymore, and your rate's going to come down. So in theory, you'll have a lower rate, less deductions. My suspicion is the rich are probably not going to like this when it's all said and done, because they're the ones that do all these tricky write-off things. The super rich are probably going to be okay with it, because the lower rate will help them. The middle class are the ones that will hopefully benefit the most, and then the lower middle class will benefit. That's the way I think it's going to come down. If Mr. Trump is smart, and I believe him to be pretty bright, that's what he will do. If it's a giveaway to the rich, it'll never get through, in my opinion, unless they, you know, abolish that whole filibuster thing and get the 51 vote job done. If they do that, then they can probably get anything through. Some say that's what they ought to do instead of keep fighting with the Democrats. I kind of like the fact that Trump actually reached out to, if you can believe this, Chucky and whatever her name is. Who? Oh, yeah. I try to keep her out of my mind, Nancy. I was reaching for her first name. I don't think, Craig, it's going to alter investment planning. It probably shouldn't alter investment planning. Now, that's the state tax deduction. Tax planning will alter how we do investments. Stay tuned to the show. I'll tell you what you need to do. How's that? Or at least give you suggestions. I don't tell people what to do or where to go anymore. My wife does that. Charlie, I have an annuity and I don't need the income. Can I gift the annuity income to my kids and avoid taxable income? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? We get the income and we don't have to pay tax because we're gifting it to our kids. Nah, doesn't work that way. Now, you can take the income and gift it to a legitimate charity. Your kids are not a charity case, at least not as far as the IRS code is concerned. If you give the income to the charity in cash, you can deduct that on your return, assuming it doesn't exceed the cash 50% of your adjusted gross income. So you can give it to charity, can't give it to your kids. If you want to gift the annuity to your kids, it will be a taxable event. Whenever you change ownership of an annuity, you now will have to pay the taxes. So what you want to do, Charlie, I don't know of any way you can do. Talk to your CPA. Maybe they're more creative than I. But I'm going to say no. Catherine, I've been listening to your program for 15 years. Oh, there's a round of applause for sure. I didn't believe you when you said my spending would go down in retirement, but it has, as you predicted. Thanks. Well, I didn't really predict it. I just reported the facts from academic studies, from white papers, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And it's why I think to get all anxious and worked up about the 4% rule, the 2.8% rule, and not take into account spending in retirement, discretionary spending for the most part in retirement, is a mistake. It's a mistake because everybody's different. Now, some people will spend more in retirement. I get that. But by and large, people like Catherine do, in fact, spend less. You don't drive as much. You don't eat as much. You don't commute as much. Many times you don't travel. You don't have to travel as much. The house is usually paid off, or your housing costs go down, or you move to a state where there's no state income tax. Your taxes are lower. You don't have to pay Social Security. All of that stuff. You're not funding retirement accounts. It all goes in to a lower spending need. I'm out of time. Make it a great day, folks. God bless. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com.